Hi, this is Paul. When this Deconstructing Jordan Peterson on Religion video dropped from Cosmic Skeptic, the algorithm served it up to me right away. I watched a few minutes of it and thought, nah. But a lot of people have been poking me and saying, hey, you should talk about this. You should talk about this. Yeah, okay. There's a lot to talk about. Some of it can be put fairly succinctly, and then needs a lot more explanation. First of all, the problem, as with just about all celebrity atheists, are when they talk about God, they talk about a super thing in the sky, and this is no different. In a sense, when you say, what is God? You are setting up the question in a way that minimizes God. And that's exactly what Jordan Peterson is trying to address in the admittedly difficult and cryptic way he goes about talking about it, which is part of the reason that I do what I do on this channel. Now, Cosmic Skeptic is not failing to do his homework. He, I think, is seemingly failing to understand the larger conversation around Peterson that Peterson is clearly participating in that Cosmic Skeptic has very little understanding of. So, now, again, when you listen to him, ask yourself, when he uses the word God, how much assumption is in his mind about what I call the super thing in the sky?
To Jordan Peterson, what is God?
All right, so I got to reset my sound here.
Peterson, what is God? To begin answering this, we need to understand Peterson's views about value. For Jordan Peterson, our ability to do just about anything requires a belief in some set of value judgments.
Now, what he proceeds to go into is, I think, a pretty fair treatment of this conversation that Peugeot and Peterson are talking about. This also gets into exactly what Jordan Peterson was trying to address with Sam Harris in the first Vancouver lecture. The first Vancouver talk with Sam Harris, Peterson tries to get at with Sam Harris the fact that there is a lot of cognition that is, for the most part, invisible to us. We are naive to it, but all of that cognition goes into the world that we perceive. Now, if you really want to understand this, you have to pay some attention to John Vervaeke and the work that he has been doing. And not just John Vervaeke, but cognitive science and all the work that is going on there. For the most part, most of these new atheists continue to live in a Lockean world where we imagine that we just are these passive observers that simply receive stimulus. On a recent weekend trip, I was listening to Oliver Sacks' book, which is probably from the 1990s, and so this is relatively old science, where in the first case, he's talking about an artist who, after a car accident, becomes colorblind in a fairly unusual way. And this colorblindness has absolutely nothing to do with his eyes, but has to do with the impact that the artist received to his brain, in particular areas of his brain that are used for processing visual sight. And what Sacks goes through in that first chapter, and again, this is old, this is probably 30-year-old science getting into the question of how we see what we see, how this image that we naively, and I don't mean that pejoratively, I mean just natively, naively perceive as, well, I'm looking at a screen and I'm looking at a camera and I'm looking at pictures on the screen and there are colors on the screen. There's a whole lot that actually goes into the perception of these things. For example, when I'm looking at this camera, I'm not taking apart the lens from the camera. I have a little microphone on top of the camera that I use for live streaming if I don't want to use this big mic here, and a whole bunch of things. I don't separate those. I just talk about the camera. And this, of course, is what Peterson and Peugeot and Vervaeke have been talking about, and a whole bunch of other channels in this little corner of the internet have been talking about. And this is you know, the cosmic skeptics should not be skeptical at all about this, except the fact that they complain about an Iron Age Bible when they're basically using an early modernist model of understanding how we perceive things in the world. And this is exactly what Peterson is going on about in this conversation with Jonathan Peugeot and Douglas Murray. And so he goes into the glass and he talks about the glass and goes into all of this. And he basically says that Peterson is being somehow hopelessly obtuse and evasive when he doesn't come, maybe I'll let cosmic skeptics say it himself.
Until we get to the very top, the thing that we value most of all, upon which everything else is predicated. Okay, so in order to see anything or do anything, we must be motivated by some hierarchy of values. So here's an important question. What is at the top of that value hierarchy? What is the fundamental value upon which everything else is based? Here's where it gets really interesting.
And you might say, well, how hard are you going to try when you write this essay? And the answer to that would be, well, it depends on how well integrated my view of the ethic is all the way up to the highest place. And then we could say, well, the highest place is the divine place, and we could make that a matter of definition.
There it is. Did you catch that? It was so quick that you'd miss it if you blinked. But Jordan Peterson just told us what God is in his view. Listen again.
And then we could say, well, the highest place is the divine place, and we could make that a matter of definition.
The highest place, that is, the highest place on this value hierarchy that we were just talking about, is the divine place, and we can make that a matter of definition.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, we do this all the time. A beautiful woman comes around, and we say, she's a goddess. The best piece of cake we eat, we say, this is absolutely divine. This is the way we use the language. This is the way we talk about the sacred. This is all of this. Now, again, for the most part, this atheist debate and why it's so tiresome is all about whether or not there's a super thing in the sky, and we call that God. Now, there's a lot built into that I've talked about a lot, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about a lot, because there's a lot that is worthwhile talking about it. But the basic definition here, this is pretty much what Peterson is doing. He is looking at us and saying, what do we mean when we're talking about God? And the definition is not that simple.
Wow. The word divine, of course, means of or relating to God.
Okay, so we're going to take the first simple definition from a simplistic dictionary and say, that's what divine means. Is this really the level of analysis that we're going to be getting from this individual? Divine, this is what divine means. Well, heroes with divine powers, a god like God or a gods. You know, this is part of the reason I didn't even want to touch this video, because it's just silly.
And Peterson has just told us that for him, it's a simple matter of definition that the divine is just whatever value is at the highest place on the value hierarchy. So let's...
And this is exactly how people live. And this is exactly why people continue to deal with everything they deal with. I was just listening to a video. Someone sent me a video of an interview with Bono. Now I'm gonna have to. We'll see how the copyright people like this. I'm not gonna play it because I don't want to have YouTube say, "Oh, you can't have this little section in your video," because somehow CBS is going to protect it, even though it's on YouTube. No different from Jordan Peterson. No different from Cosmic Skeptic. And I can't take that little bit of YouTube, but I can take another. So fine. I talk in my videos recently about gentle slope versus steep slope evangelism, and Bono is very much gentle slope. He talks about the Beatles, and he talks about Paul McCartney, and he talks about wanting to, you know, have this little session with Paul McCartney, and he talks about basically how the Beatles for him were religious. What does he mean? Now, again, Bono is a Christian, and you can debate what kind of Christian he has. Go ahead and have that debate. I don't care. But he's very much a gentle slope Christian, because the Beatles, their music is divine. What is he saying? They're at the top of the hierarchy. They have a quality that transcends the other kinds of music I have. Now, from a phenomenological perspective, from sort of a common sense relational value perspective, that's how people talk. So Peterson talking like that, this is what Peterson is doing. And Peterson is trying to connect these worlds. Now, Cosmic Skeptic is, okay, he's going to be skeptical, I suppose. But the end of his conclusion is that Jordan Peterson is an atheist because Jordan Peterson does not believe in the super thing in the sky. Now, this gets really interesting and complex when we have conversations between biblical Unitarians and Jews and Muslims, like we've been starting to have more and more in this little corner of the internet. But if you really want to go into this conversation, take a look at John Vervaeke, and take a look at the point that, well, I guess I can play my own video without YouTube having a problem.
Hi, this is Paul, and today, I'm sure John will post this on his channel too, probably. Mm-hmm. But John Vervaeke and I are going to have another conversation. I posted a video a week or two ago, and John made a comment, said, "Oh, let's talk about some of this stuff." And I'm sure that there'll be no shortage of things for John and I to talk about.
Yeah.
And I was just mentioning that when, you know, I saw that little snippet of what you had done with Rafe about non-theism, and I was talking to a Roman Catholic scholar about doing a conversation about that Bishop Barron Cosmic Skeptic conversation. I thought, wow, some of this non-theism is very interesting in terms of, let's say, classical theism versus non-theism. And
And I thought the video was very good. And I thought some of the critique of some of the stuff the Cosmic Skeptic was saying was good. You had both criticisms, and you also pointed out this is a strong argument. This argument needs to be responded to. I thought that was excellent. Now, for me also, I've just been reading. I'm reading and purchased a bunch. This book, for example, Mystical Monotheism: A Study in Ancient Platonic Theology, by John Peter Kenny, is having a deep impact on the fact that
John Vervaeke should be paid by Amazon just for the books that I buy because John Vervaeke recommends them.
What I thought was classical theism isn't perhaps best called classical theism. This book, The Unknown God, Negative Theology in the Platonic Tradition, Plato to Erigena, by Deidre Carabine, which is, and then Bishop Barron, he'd love that. I've got this new book, The World is God's Icon, Creator and Creation in the Platonic Thought of Thomas Aquinas. It's all about participation. And then Participation in God, A Study in Christian Doctrine and Metaphysics. So I've been trying to be responsible to, you know, that I need a more refined and nuanced way of talking about non-theism in contrast to theism. I even proposed in the comment that I might need a distinction between what we might call common theism, the kind of post-Enlightenment theism that, you know, that was bounced off and bounced with deism and stuff like that, and classical theism, in which a lot of notions that I think are found within the non-theistic religions also get prominent place within what turns out to be frequently Orthodox Christianity. If Thomas Aquinas isn't Orthodox, I'm not quite sure who is. But of course, some of these people are also considered heretics, Erigena, for example. Right. So that stuff sits right, for me, and I mean this properly, it sits right on the boundary of Christianity. Do you know what I mean? What's inside and outside, while still going to the core in a lot of ways. And again, because, you know, Augustine and Dionysius, like, these are pretty, you know, orthodox sources for Western Christianity, Eastern Christianity. Anyways, this is a long rambling way of me saying I want to enter into dialogue about this because I think, my own thinking needs refinement on this. And I guess I'll state a kind of what I want to do. I want to do that, and I want to enter into your excellent discussion around that. But I have a goal that you might not have, because part of my allegiance to the idea of non-theism is I want to be able to talk about. In fact, I'll make it more personal. When I left Christianity, I found Platonism and Neoplatonism, I found Buddhism and I found Taoism, and they did things for me, and they continue to do things for me. The best analogy I can have is they're some of my best friends, and I have a tremendous loyalty to them, and I won't sort of go into any position that requires me to take up a kind of disloyalty to them or a denigration of what they have done or continue to do for me. And part of my allegiance to non-theism, and I don't think my situation is in any way, you know, unique or special. I think there's lots of people in that boat. And so part of what I want to do with the non-theism is be able to talk about the sacred in a way that maintains that loyalty to Neoplatonism, to Buddhism and Taoism. Now, of course, one of the advantages is...
And of course, I have a similar loyalty to theism. Okay, so that conversation that John Vervaeke and I were doing was a response to a video that I had made. Is Bishop Barron's Catholic God non-theistic in Vervaeke's terms? How does this play out? That's a two-hour video. I could insert the whole video into this video, but I'll spare you, and I'll just have a little excerpt. And I thought, oh, okay, good. So then I listened to it, and it was short. But now all the non-theism, ask yourself here if Bishop Barron is a non-theist.
Ben, because I resonate very much with something Alex just said about Dawkins. Do you know your countryman, he died only about 20 years ago now, Herbert McCabe, the great Dominican theologian, one of the great contemporary Thomists.
Now, those of you who are listening and not watching, this is an excerpt from Bishop Barron talking to the same cosmic skeptic and talking to him about theism. Cosmic skeptic apparently doesn't get the point from Bishop Barron, who I don't think he would call Bishop Barron an atheist.
Yes, I think. And McCabe often debated atheists publicly in England, but he always made one stipulation, that the atheist would speak first, and then he'd respond. And invariably, he would listen to the atheist make the presentation, and he would say, I completely agree with you. And what he meant simply was this, that atheists serve, and I mean this very seriously, a very important function, and that's to debunk forms of idolatry. So there's a very good example, the crude presentation of God as a being, as some big being alongside of others. Where the mainstream of our tradition has consistently denied that of God. And when you fall into that trap, now there's a very crude version of it, the big man with the white beard, but there are less crude versions of it that are still just as problematic. When God is construed as one...
I'm a big man with a white beard.
...one competitive being among many, a lot of the problems that the atheists put their finger on emerge. And I mean now going back to Feuerbach and Marx and Jean-Paul Sartre and company, when God is construed competitively, competing for us on the same ontological playing field, a lot of the typical atheist reactions occur. And they're right. They're right to put their finger on that and say, that God doesn't exist. And so I'm with McCabe a lot of the time with atheists. I'll say, yeah, good, I agree. Feuerbach, you know, yes. If God is simply a projection of my idealized self-understanding, Isaiah knew about that. He called it idolatry. Ezekiel knew all about that. If God is just opium for the masses to assuage our suffering, well, of course that's an idol. We put a crucified criminal at the heart of our religious imagination. You know, Sartre, if God exists, I can't be free. But I am free, therefore God doesn't exist. Well, he's right. If God is a great competitor to my freedom. So I say thank God for all those atheists who rid us of certain idols.
Okay. So what Cosmic Skeptic has essentially done for us is demonstrate to us that Jordan Peterson is not an idolater. Woohoo! This is why when I saw even the beginning of this video and saw what he was doing, I thought, I don't want to talk about this video. This is a silly video to talk about because he's going to come to the conclusion.
Secular. Christians are generally asked to believe in God, not as some fictional representative value judgment, but as a real entity existing independently of the human mind, who really came to Earth as a human and was really crucified by the...
Okay, well, now he's talking about Christians. Okay, and Christianity, I would say, is a subset of theism. And theism, as Bishop Barron just basically told him, is a pretty complex thing. And as the point I made in that video that John Vervaeke responded to, let's see if I still have the comment. Ginger Bill had a comment in there. Here's John Vervaeke's comment in there. So this is stuff we've been over. Christianity does not assert that what God finally means is a super thing in the sky. So yeah, it's really kind of a dumb point. And having sat with Bishop Barron on Unbelievable, it would be nice if Alex O'Connor knew better and didn't make such a video, but he did. And so the best we can perhaps say is that Alex O'Connor proves Jordan Peterson is not an idolater. Maybe I'll make a second video and deal with his second point, which is equally ham-fisted about history and the Bible and what we mean by events and what really happened and what Jordan Peterson is saying. Because, in fact, he plucks out salient clips, but he doesn't seem to either want to understand or can't understand or wants to play like he doesn't understand, which I don't know why he's playing this game. So leave a comment. Let me know what you think.